Hello and welcome to Launch. We're broadcasting live here from here in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm Ron Reardon. My co-host is Bill McHenry. Bill, how is it going for you today?
Absolutely fantastic, Ron. How are you?
Yep, doing super. Well, you know, Bill, on Launch, we focus on the launching of a business, the planning that precedes the launch itself, the missteps and successes of the launch, and we do all that so that entrepreneurs can successfully navigate their launch. This morning, we're featuring Mike Drummond of Inventor's Digest, but before we get started, Bill, could you thank today's sponsor?
I sure will, Ron. Today, our sponsor is Entrepreneur Sales and Marketing. Entrepreneur Sales and Marketing is your one-stop source for all your marketing, sales, and business development needs. We customize and implement a business strategy to help build your business, grow your sales, and encourage your success.
And we really appreciate their support. Well, today we'll be interviewing Mike Drummond. He's the editor-in-chief of Inventor's Digest. As such, he oversees all the editorial as well as the financial and marketing aspects of the nation's longest-running publication in the invention industry. Mike serves on various company and academic boards. He's a judge and speaker at industry events. His work has appeared in the Harvard Business Review, Wired, Salon.com, Fortune, CNET, Business 2.0, Forrester Research Magazine, among others. It's carried by the Associated Press and Knight Ridder McCatchy Newswires. He's a 2008 Pulitzer Prize finalist and winner of numerous investigative feature and business writing awards. He's also the author of Renegades of the Empire, which is an inside story of Microsoft's computer game and internet ambitions. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Wow, welcome. Nice talking with you guys, Bill and Ron. That sounds impressive when you put it all together. First off, congratulations on your radio show, and a salute to your sponsors. It's really heartening to see you guys get this thing off the ground.
Yeah, it's really been a lot of fun.
Awesome.
Yeah, we really have had a lot of fun. I feel like I should maybe call you Mr. Drummond, Mike, after that introduction.
Yeah, I know. No kidding, man.
or just Your Excellency. Nah. You know.
Your Excellency, yeah, that's right.
Nah, just call me Mike. We're
all right. Okay. All right. Well, hey, Mike, tell us a little bit about your role at Inventor's Digest and how inventors can get involved with Inventor's Digest.
All right. Well, my role is like at the outset here, I oversee all the editorial content. I am in charge of finding, developing, acquiring, and putting together, along with my staff, some of the best of breed content for the inventing and innovation community. One of the best ways that inventors and product developers and IP professionals and others to whom we cater to get in our magazine and on our website is to hit our website for submission guidelines, and that's at inventorsdigest.com. And we really like stories that get into the challenges overcome, kind of like, I guess, what you guys, in your preamble, you kind of hit on the lessons learned kind of thing. We really like the challenges overcome, the dark before the light, the lessons learned from missteps. Those tend to be more inspirational, and you can learn a lot more from roads that you probably shouldn't have gone down than, you know, your successes, although to be sure, we celebrate those successes in each and every issue. This year, we expanded on our radar and under radar section to showcase more inventions that could use some more exposure. These are often ones from inventors that and from new companies that have already developed a product, maybe have small inventory, even a large inventory, but just need a little bit of booster fuel to get it to another orbit. So and we're trying to get more of those on our site as well. As a matter of fact, just before y'all called, I was posting some under the radar stuff, some nascent products from just brand new inventors who were just getting into the market. And as a final thing, we're always to get your product in our magazine. We really need high definition or high resolution images, and that's in 300 dpi or 300 dots per inch. Just for those out there who aren't maybe photo savvy, just set your digital cameras to as many megapixels as it can handle, and we'll be good to go. The bigger the image, the better.
Okay. Well, Mike, you know, Inventor's Digest has been around for quite some time. I'm looking at an issue now that says celebrating 25 years in circulation. And I remember when you guys took over that the quality of the magazine just went up a quantum leap. And I know that there's the trends in innovation have changed over the years. Can you explain to our listeners what some of the larger trends in innovation are?
Well, you know, as I become a history of the industry, back in the 90s, late 80s, 90s, it was sort of the Wild West, and it was an era where, you know, the internet and social media had not really flourished yet, and there wasn't research took a little bit of more legwork and elbow grease, and that was a time where you saw a lot of more nefarious characters than you see now. Taking advantage of pie-in-the-sky dreamer type one-off inventors. And, you know, that's why we have the American Protectors Act now, and some legislation came into play. We're seeing a bit more of a maturation of the inventor industry. I mean, I got into it 4 or 5 years ago. It was called the inventor community. I prefer the inventor industry to reflect that maturation. And I think we're entering the area of not only open innovation, which is definitely a buzzword, and it means different things to different people, but I think because of more companies are opening their R&D doors and product development doors to outside ideas, I think we're also seeing the era of the intermediary or the broker, those guys out there that can say they can make you millions, or you can make millions with an unpatented idea, with emailing and phoning the right person at Corporation X. Yeah, I guess, you know, that happens. I think that's more the exception than the rule. I think to a larger degree, companies are expecting a more sophisticated entree and approach from inventors, and that's why you're seeing a growth of the intermediary or the broker. And this really came home to me when I was talking with the folks at Rawlings Sporting Goods, and we talk about it in our upcoming October issue that features the great Cal Ripken Jr. on the cover. And Rawlings told me that they love outside ideas. As a matter of fact, they put a clarion call for new ideas through our sister business company at SN Nation to find new sporting good ideas. But they just didn't, they're leery or wary of dealing with independent inventors. And I know outside product developers and startup companies that are looking to license their products with larger companies bristle at that. But that's the reality. And they prefer to deal with an intermediary, in this case, Edison Nation, and there are tons of others out there. Rather than individual inventors. And so I think that individual inventors, it's in a good sense, are going to find welcome homes in a lot of these brokers that can actually establish relationships with bigger companies.
Well, Mike, tell me some of the mistakes, the biggest mistakes that inventor and entrepreneurs tend to make, and what others can really learn from these mistakes.
Where does one start, you guys? I think the one that comes to mind, the one that really leaps out at me, is unrealistic expectations. Maybe giving you guys an anecdote is a better way to illustrate what I'm talking about. Earlier this year, I was moderating a panel at the Response Expo in San Diego. It's for those who are unfamiliar with Response Expo, it's basically the trade show, one of the trade shows for the infomercial crowd. That and the Electronic Retail Association has a bigger show. But anyway, so I was out there, I was moderating a panel, and so when it came down to the Q&A, one of the panelists told the audience that to expect a 1-2% royalty on their product, and there was like an audible gasp, literally an audible gasp, you know, in the almost standing room only crowd. And you know, since then I've talked with a guy named Robert Souza at InventHelp. You may have heard of the company. Robert's actually a really great guy. And he confirms that 1 to 2% for the DRTV, direct response TV infomercial royalty thing. But outside of that channel, you can get up to inventors and others that are doing startup companies that are cutting licensing deals with corporate partners. They can expect up to like a 7% royalty, but you need a good utility patent. You need a good intellectual property protection to get that kind of larger royalty rate. So, you know, the big mistakes, I think, are sort of unrealistic expectations, and that falls, in, I guess, under the larger rubric of failing to do market research.
Yeah, because one thing...
I don't know, have you guys found that? Have you guys found that in your, you know, in your dealings with entrepreneurs and inventors, that there seems to be a sort of disconnect when it comes to those types of expectations?
Yeah, I see that all the time. There's so many that have so many entrepreneurs and inventors that have these unrealistic expectations, and you know, they expect to make millions. You know, I can't tell you how many people I say, well, I'm going to make millions on this, and you know, there's very, very, very slim margin, or a few people rather, that make that kind of money on anything. So I think it's a problem in the whole industry. I really do.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is that when you tell them, and when I tell them, and I've often get met with hostility on it, unfortunately, sort of like slay the messenger kind of thing. When I tell them about the 1 to 2%, or, you know, maybe up to 7, perhaps even 10%, and even that kind of floors them, they'll tell me that, you know, well, this is a multi-million dollar idea, and that everybody will want this. You know, and I just think that, well, you know, if everybody wanted it, then you probably would have been successful by now.
Right.
Yeah, I think they tend to overvalue the idea and then undervalue the effort that it takes for a company to actually commercialize something.
You know what? I'm glad you brought that up, Ron, because that's exactly like I lost my jag when I was just speaking right now. But it's the companies, it's the corporations that are taking on all the product development risk. You know, they're doing the marketing, they're doing the manufacturing, they're doing the tooling. They're putting in a significant amount of investment to get this thing either on store shelves or through e-commerce or on DRTV, and that's where the huge expense. The huge initial capital outlay is. And, you know, I guess it's our job, your job, and my job over here at the magazine and on our website is to continue the education of the industry, at least on the inventor side, that these sort of risks entail a lot of costs. And that's why the royalty rates are where they are.
Yeah, that's correct.
Well, I know in the product that we're launching, yeah, I've spent almost $200,000 on it, and I was telling an inventor actually the other day about it, and he said, well, have you made all your money back? And I said, no. I said, but I've gotten orders for about $20,000.
No, right. Nice.
You know?
Yeah. A tidy 10%. Hey, so well, what product is that? Are you at liberty to say?
Well, no, that's the Vacket product. It was actually, you actually saw it. You were kind enough to put it in the magazine quite a while ago. It's the company is Widgeteer. And, you know, it's been a real eye-opener for me, and it's been really it's given me and Entrepreneur Sales and Marketing a lot of credibility that we've are starting to launch this product, but it's mind-boggling to me how much money and time it's taken, you know, to get this thing going, and it still may not go. You know, we think it will, but who knows?
Well, just remember, Bill, it takes years to be an overnight success.
I've heard from others in the industry where they've done all the right testing, and that's, you know, and that's the other thing too about this business is that it's so terribly hard to get a new product on the market. Terribly, terribly hard. I mean, the odds are stacked against you, but if you do make it, then, you know, you're getting mailbox money, and that's why we do this, and we can make a difference in our lives, and we can join the elite fraternity of people who have actually put products on the market.
Right.
Yeah, so it's really, really, really tough, and it gets back to that expectations thing I was telling you about. I was talking with this one guy who did this market research, did a limited run product, either it was HSN or QVC really excited about it. They did everything. They got all their ducks in a row. It was some sort of toothbrush product. They got all their ducks lined up in a row, did everything by the manual, everything that you're supposed to do right. Threw it up there on a mid-market, I think it was in Kansas or something, TV market, bombed. It just bombed in the infomercial test. And, that's what could be frustrating, too, is that you can do everything right, yet still lay an egg.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Well, good luck with you on that product, though.
Well, thanks, Mike. I'll keep you posted. If it really takes off and you hear a big yell and scream yay from up around Chicago, you know it's me.
Well, that's the other thing we like to do too. We like to follow up. We'll definitely follow up on those sort of success stories. So, I've got my fingers crossed for you.
Well, thanks.
Well, Mike, you mentioned about the unrealistic expectations. On the other side of the coin, the American Bar Association produces a little publication for entrepreneurs, and they've got one sentence in there that talks about two common areas that entrepreneurs and inventors and product developers really underestimate. Is they underestimate how much time it's going to take to get a product to market and how much money it's going to take to get it to market.
I always tell people it will take you twice as much and twice as long.
Yeah, and that's real accurate. Very, very accurate.
Yeah. It may be low, actually.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm an optimist. My beer glass is always half full, gentlemen. Always half full.
Okay. We're continuing on the theme of the biggest mistakes inventors and entrepreneurs make, and like you said, where do you start? And then you started with the unrealistic expectations. Do they sometimes do things out of sequence? I mean, do they try to get a patent, too soon, or do they, not
no,
do
diligence? No, I think the answer. Yeah, the answer to that. Yeah, yeah. They always. I think the passion is the blessing and the curse of particularly the first time inventor and the first time startup entrepreneur, because you, on one hand, you need in the alchemy. The calculus of launching a product, you need that passion, you need that optimism, or else if you thought it were doomed, you probably wouldn't even get out of bed in the first place. But at the same time, that thing can also cloud your judgment, and that's if I can do kind of a smash cut to another sort of lesson that I kind of preach, is that product development is definitely a team sport. And I think probably, Bill, you could probably speak to that as well as anybody. And you too, Ron. That you have to fill in the gaps of where you're deficient in your expertise.
Yep.
Yeah, because the John Wayne approach to inventing doesn't work. Okay, it is a team effort, and you got to have people with the expertise and the skills and the contacts that you don't have to supplement things if you really want to get to market as fast as possible.
Well, in my conversations with, and I'm going to name drop because I'm a shameless name dropper, but in my conversations with like James Dyson and Dean Kamen, by the way, who's dyslexic, talk about overcoming an obstacle there. They talk openly about how they filled in their gaps with the people. With people that had greater expertise in certain areas that they do, than they have, rather. So, they're often thought about as the iconoclast inventors. But to be sure, they have a team of very smart people with them and around them to make them the successes that they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you really have to understand your strengths and weaknesses to be successful. In anything.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And given human nature the way it is, it's sometimes hard to look in the mirror and say, "Hey, maybe not so good at this." But I think the more successful people are people who realize and can identify their own limitations.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned earlier.
Anyway, that's kind of a downer. Maybe we can go on to something
that's right.
more lifting.
Yeah,
I've seen a lot of success stories too. You know.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the issue that's got Cal Ripken on it, and I'm looking at that issue right now. And I'm always amazed at how you contact these folks, because you've had some pretty famous people on the cover of this. How do you get in touch with these folks?
I'm a fearless communicator, and I think this is what entrepreneurs and independent product developers and inventors can learn from as well, is that couple things here. If you never ask, you'll always get no. You got to get on the phone, and you have to be willing to cold call. You have to be your own best marketer in a lot of cases. All right, if you can't hire a Madison Avenue, you know, publicity agency or whatever, marketing agency, you're going to have to do it on your own. I was just there was some guy walking through the hallway yesterday, asked me the same question. Actually, he was looking at Adam Carolla and Jay Leno and Ben Stiller and Joan London and Cal Ripken. He says, "Ah, man, how do you do that?" And he's actually with a local magazine, and I said, "Well, I think that we have a David Goliath kind of thing. We're just quirky enough to where people who have a softness in their heart for, you know, the inventor community, and who like to see the small guy and gal succeed. We play that up. Now we're an international publication, and we have a pretty significant, at least for our niche, circulation. But it's niche nonetheless. And I've found that if I call up somebody and say, "Hey, we represent independent inventors and the small business person, and we would really like to have you on the cover as sort of a to help us, you know, in our mission to foster the spirit and practice of American innovation," there's no downside to that. You know, it's a positive spin on a benefit to them. And that's the other thing, I guess, inventors and product developers and entrepreneurs can learn. When you approach somebody, it's best to present why this is a value to them, because nothing motivates like self-interest, I've found again and again. And if you can give them a value proposition, why is your product, why should I use my time, why should I use my resources dealing with you? If you could give them a good answer to that, you can get Cal Ripken, Jay Leno, Adam Carolla, and others on the cover, and you can get your product in front of the right people.
Well, I always tell people when they're talking about their product or their service, I always say, forget about thinking of it that way. Think of it as a solution, and find out who needs that solution. And if someone doesn't need it, they're not going to buy it.
You know, I think I read that from a guy named
you
Bill
may have read that
in my magazine.
You may have read that.
Yeah.
And you're right about asking people, too. You know, you have to go and ask. I tell, you know, in sales, I do all sorts of sales training, and I say you have to ask for the order. No one is going to give you anything unless you ask. You have to.
It gets back to that. If you don't ask, then you always get no, and so might as well. Mm-hmm. But you got to have the value proposition too. So
exactly.
Yeah, the solution. I really like that, by the way. And I'll have to get you to write something else for us.
Sure, be happy to do that sometime. Yeah,
right on.
So, Mike, what are your thoughts about the USPTO and the patent reform that's going on right now?
Boy. Well, it's interesting. You know, there's like a bunch of chatter going on right now because there's been some recent, and I mean recent this week, letters and congressional move to sort of exhume what was to date moribund Patent Reform Act. And got a couple things on that. You know, it's like we tend to live in this era of the exclamation mark where everybody's yelling and you're either a socialist or a nutjob Tea Party zealot. And I think there's a lot of hyperbole around this patent reform bill as well. And, you know, I think there's a lot of noise and just too little light. And I know there's concerns about the bill as it is written. And as I look at it, and it's a fairly complex piece of legislation, there are there are some areas that don't address the systemic problems, but they're largely due to examiner-related issues, and they're kind of marginal. Here's my take. All right, I'll just come out and say it. I'm for the thing, and I know this puts me at odds, even though I'm a board member of the American Innovators for Patent Reform, but we can talk about that some other time. But I tend to have faith in the folks who are smarter than I am, and which is a large universe, by the way. But I'm particularly have faith in folks when it comes to those who have expertise in specialized fields. So I've talked to this guy named David Kappos, who's the director of the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, a couple of times, and he's on board with this patent reform. And but he's also a flexible guy. And I've been impressed with his leadership to date. He has, unlike the previous guy, he's not tone deaf, and you know he's thrown some stuff at the wall, and some of it has stuck with some applause from the intellectual property community. Other stuff, like his three-track patent proposal, where if you pay more, you can get faster patent processing, which is sort of unequal. Anyway. He's pulled back from that. The point is he's flexible and he's willing to listen. I say the current system is broken, particularly when it comes to how fast it is to get a patent, particularly when it comes to software. So I say let's give Kappos an opportunity to fix this problem and move on. I don't think the world will stop spinning on its axis if this is passed, and I don't think it's anti-independent inventor. There, I said it. I'm for patent reform.
Okay. Because, you know, the patent reform bill is really polarizing, and there's people, you know, on all sides of that. And we could talk ad infinitum about the pluses and minuses.
Yeah, yeah, right. I know. It's a huge can of worms. But you know what? It's like the Arizona immigration thing.
Right.
It's not Nazi Germany. I don't think we need that hyperbole, you know. And I don't think that, you know, when we're putting cameras on corners of in major cities, it's not Orwellian. You know, we're all not wearing gray suits and walking in lockstep like they're doing over in like North Korea. I just think we live in this era of exclamation marks, and I think we just got to just tone it down a notch and just let's just see what happens here.
I agree with that, and you know you're right. You know Dave Kappos is the knight on the shining armor on the white horse as far as the patent office is concerned. He's really doing a lot of good stuff.
I think he's doing a great job. And you know what? I was impressed, and I've got a pretty good bullshit meter, and I could say that because we're not on terrestrial radio, right?
That's correct.
All right. So anyway, I got a good BS meter. I'll tone it down a little bit. I got a good, pretty good BS meter, I like to think. And, you know, being able to look into his eyes, and when he tells me he's got the independent inventor's back, and then he follows up with some very friendly independent inventor proposals, I take the guy at his. Not only do I take him at his word, he's walking the walk, so he's walking the talk, and I say let's give this guy his due.
Yep, I agree. And speaking of the individual inventors, what is one of your favorite inventor stories from this year?
Oh man, has to be this guy, and I never heard of him before a couple months ago. A guy named Jordan Fishman. He's an elderly guy. Inventor who's been in actually very successful businessman, lives down in Florida now, runs a business that makes tires for mining vehicles. Niche business, to be sure, but very lucrative business because these tires are very expensive pieces of equipment. You think your good riches are expensive. These things cost $5,000-$6,000 a pop. And he developed a special tire that was asymmetrical. It was like thick walls on the outside, thinner on the inside, and it allowed them to survive better the bumps and grinds of the harsh environment that mines are. And these things stand about as tall as you are, and you know they weigh thousands of pounds. Anyway, his friend, and I should use that in quote, and his business partner, when he was taking forays to China, bandied off with his copyrighted designs and sold them and cut a deal with a Dubai and Chinese industrial competitors. And we write about it in that October issue, actually, right now. And it shows how David could really kick the butt of Goliath, and at least with the right legal team and the right intellectual property protection. And it's a classic kind of Bob Kearns victory story. And he got, like, I don't know, 20-something million? I don't know what. I don't want to misquote my own story. But he just a couple of months ago, he got awarded all kinds of money from a Virginia court. Anyway, one of my favorite stories, because not only does it touch on that David versus Goliath thing, it was a learning lesson in how if you have the right set of intellectual property protection, you can actually beat the odds. And actually did it in almost record time. It was within a couple of years. Usually these things can last decades. And his enemies in Dubai and in China were quoted in open court as saying, "Well, we thought he was going to die, and he didn't have enough money anyway to survive this case." So
they said that.
Yeah. They said that in open court. And so I think the judge of the jury took that into consideration and awarded him quite a bit of money.
Hey, Mike, switching gears a little bit just to the magazine, tell our listeners maybe some of the initiatives the magazine is going to unveil next. If
well,
you want to, that is.
Yeah. We've got some really interesting things coming up. One of them I really want to talk about, but can't. but it will be a major event, and Congress is getting involved, and that's about all I can say on that. But that's happening next year. One of the things I can talk about is our special quarterly. Every 4 months, we're starting in January. We're going to start this 7 to Spot series, where we celebrate some of the brightest and most creative inventors and innovators in various market segments. We're going to start with health and medical devices, and then it's going to go every 4 months. We're going to be looking at, or every 3 months, we're going to be looking at technologies from like college and academic circles, and those from technology and that kind of stuff. So anyway, we're going to be having like, the best of every 3 months, and we're already looking for bright folks who have invented some great medical or home health care devices, and if any of your listeners out there have got something that they think is superlative and a market killer, let me know. We'll put you in the list and maybe be able to celebrate you in the magazine.
Yeah, and Mike, that leads me into my next question. You know, many inventors will just die to get their product and their story in Inventor's Digest. How can our listeners get in touch with you?
Well, the easiest way is by email. Mike.Drummond@InventorsDigest.com. And if that's too long for you, you can go info@InventorsDigest.com or call me directly, 704-405-0712. That number again is 704-405-0712.
And
the door's always open.
Yeah, and operators are standing by. Okay.
Thanks
for being on our show today, Mike. Our listeners have gotten some really great nuggets and learnings that they can use in their inventive journey.
Hey, guys, it was my pleasure. My pleasure. And look forward to showcasing what you guys got going in our magazine. So
that sounds super. Well, another great show, Bill.
It sure was, Ron. Mike is just a super guy. We had the opportunity to meet with him a few times, and we've had a lot of good times with him. I also want to thank today's sponsor, Entrepreneur Sales and Marketing. We go the extra step, so you don't have to fret. Visit our website at www.entrepreneursales.com.
And tune in each week at this same time to listen live, or you can go to our blog to listen at a delayed basis, thelaunchhour.businessradiox.com, to listen at your convenience. This is Ron Reardon and Bill McHenry signing off another great session of The Launch Hour.